It is the Initial Reaction Podcast, where I'm JP Cadoran, and I was allowed on the court for every celebration at Girls State Basketball, working for Spectrum Sports on Saturday. How are you, JR?
I'm good, JP, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to hug you after a job well done, although seldom, since we don't often do these podcasts in the same room, so I guess that's not entirely true.
Yes, but mentally we hug all the time for a job well.
Something along those lines. Yes, I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers. We have oodles and oodles of basketball to talk about this week. JP is at State Girls Basketball. We'll start there in a minute. We also have, of course, the NCAA tournament, which announced its bracket on Sunday night, where the Badgers were...
It's not snubbed because they weren't, like, left out.
Disrespected. So. Disrespected sure. With the eighth seed.
Sure, they were. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I actually completely believe that, but we'll discuss that as well. We'll talk about Marquette. We'll talk about the boys' state basketball tournament, which is getting underway. And we welcome in Steve Teets, who is a staff writer for Now Newspapers, has been doing this a long time. We talk about the best boys' basketball programs in history, including some recent ones, notably Stevens Point, who's headed back to the state tournament after a shocker over Oshkosh North, which we have to get to. That puts them in the gives them an opportunity to win a third straight state title. Not sure anyone thought that was going to be in the cards this year. We talk about them. We talk about Germantown and their recent run of success. I wrote that oral history of a pretty important Germantown game a while back, and that's sort of all the jumping off point there. So that comes up later in the podcast. But for now, let's talk about the girls, JP. You saw five state champions crowned on Saturday at the Resch Center in Green Bay.
The five celebrations on the court that were orderly and properly taken care of. But no, so Milwaukee Academy of Science in Division 5, unable to beat Loyal, which was a good story. But they were unable to win in Division 4. Like, that might have been the game of the day. Howard's Grove was down, I want to say, like 8 points in the final 3 minutes, something like that. Were able to come back and take the lead. And I already forgot. La Crosse Aquinas, the team that they were playing, came down with the ball at the final 10 seconds, had a hard time advancing the ball past half court, which was interesting, got a shot off before the buzzer from right around the three-point line, nailed it, the buzzer sounded, they thought, like Aquinas thought, that they had hit a game-tying three, but everybody else in the building kind of knew that it was a two. They actually went to a video review, which I've never before seen at a state tournament, and confirmed that it was a two. So Howard's Grove ended up winning. That was crazy.
Couple interesting points from that. First of all, everyone on TV saw it was clearly a two in live. Like, there, it was not a question mark, which is good, I think, because if it had been a question mark, I think that would have somehow made it worse. I felt terrible for the girl who just, I think in the franticness of the moment, didn't realize she needed to take another half step back to put that up as a three.
She took one step back, right? But just not her other foot.
Yeah,
what I saw on the big board.
And totally canned it. I mean, it was a swish. It was a beautiful shot. It just, things get a little hectic in those final seconds, and I just don't think she realized where she just probably didn't feel like she had time to look down at her feet, you know, and really assess where she was. So, so a bummer there. And then also for the winning team too, Howard's Grove, they were celebrating, but then they sort of had to wait through a replay, which is a little bit of a bummer too. We've seen that sometimes in baseball.
Yeah, like I saw a couple people say that on Twitter and everything, but to me, like, I was there taping it, you know, with my camera, and like watching that moment and seeing their faces when it was announced, like that was almost better to me because they were sitting there, like the ref brought the two coaches together and explained what the ruling was going to be. And then like all of a sudden the coach turned back to her team and put her hands up in the air. And like that was one of the coolest moments I've ever seen. It was awesome. So yes, they delayed it. It wasn't a typical celebration, but it might have been even better.
Yeah, that could very well be. I mean, you were there for that, so you would know better than I.
Yeah, I'm also there. I would know, JR.
Yes, you certainly would. I am intrigued by the video replay thing because, to my knowledge, there's nothing specifically that says you can or cannot use replay at a state tournament. I think the overwhelming sentiment is to avoid using it. But when I talked briefly with Deb Hauser at the WIAA for my story about the Germantown Appleton East game from 2011, where they did not have video replay capability at the call center in Oshkosh for this game, and sort of one of the angles to the story is, well, if they had played it at the Kohl Center, as everyone would have wanted that game to be played, as it would have been in previous models of the postseason, they may have had video replay capability because they have cameras pointed in certain places and everything, and they can actually look and get a quality visual there. So that's also sort of part of the story as well. I just didn't know that they would be willing to do it. Now, I didn't know if they were looking to see if the coach had called timeout. That was his contention, and it does appear, you look at video replay, he was calling timeout. He was trying to get the attention of the ref, but I don't think that's something you could just go back and retroactively apply. Yeah. I think that's something that has to be awarded in real time for various reasons. And whether he just wasn't demonstrative enough or the refs didn't hear him for whatever reason, I don't know. But then at the same time, the coach has got to be thinking, timeout, timeout. Oh, that shot might go in. You know, like, I'm guessing there's a hesitancy there, too, to sort of go all in on that. And then – and the coach knew it was a two. The coach wasn't naive to that fact or really even arguing that fact.
Yeah, it was right in front of him. I mean, he couldn't have been any closer to it, so.
Right. It's just a bummer of a way for Aquinas' season to finish, not only to lose a late lead, but then for the poor kid who hits the shot, you know, probably for an instant thinks she's hit the biggest shot of her career, and then to have it be realized that it's more the end of the game.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I never got that bummer vibe. I don't know if it's because I was rooting for a team that I'm covering, because Howard's Grove is closer to Milwaukee than La Crosse is. So I was like, oh, cool, like, my team won. I don't know. And also just, like, you didn't hit it. I don't know. I never got that huge bummer vibe. It's as much as – or more than any other bummer of losing a state tournament.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it sucks to lose. But I don't know. I never got that vibe. I don't know if I'm just a cold-hearted piece of crap or what.
You are indeed. And whether or not it has anything to do with your coverage of the girls' basketball tournament, you are cold-hearted. And awful. But the next three games actually are the ones that that had sort of local significance in the Milwaukee area anyway, and as well for you in the Fox Valley. In Division III, Madison Edgewood took care of Martin Luther. Martin Luther was making its first ever trip to the state tournament. Madison Edgewood, with co-Miss Basketball winner Estella Moschkow, who's headed to Stanford, was a very ugly first half of basketball. I believe it was 19-11 at half. And Edgewood pulled away in the second half. Edgewood was the better team, I would say, by quite a bit, and definitely deserved to win the state title. Martin Luther had played a very good game in the semifinal over Bloomer, but Edgewood pulls away big there. And then in D2, sort of a similar situation. Cudahy had the early lead on Beaver Dam. Beaver Dam, I got to say, I think that's maybe the best team in the last – I guess I don't know off the top of my head, but certainly in the conversation of best team in the last 5 to 10 years in girls basketball in the state of Wisconsin. They capped off an undefeated season, pulled away, won the Division II title. I mean, they are just awesome, and they I don't believe they won a game by single digits this year. I believe it was all double digits or more. They destroyed Martin Luther. It was Martin Luther's only loss, the D3 state runner-up. Their only loss of the year coming into state was a very lopsided loss to Beaver Dam early in the season. I don't want to say that their schedule was lined up with landmines, but they're playing in the Little Ten with some traditionally decent programs in there and just crushing teams left and right. I don't know if that conference is a power per se, but Beaver Dam's incredible.
Yeah, that was impressive. And again, like the scoring run that you mentioned, like they were up, Cudahy was up 10-0 to start the game, and it was crazy. Like it was really interesting to watch because it lasted a long time too. It wasn't like, you know, they just went down, hit a, you know, three threes and a free throw in the first 2 minutes, and then finally Beaver Dam started scoring. Like it lasted like 5 or 6 minutes where Beaver Dam couldn't do a thing, and then the rest of the game they outscored them like whatever 59-20 or something like that. Like they completely dominated the rest of the way. So yeah, that was interesting. And then Division One. You know, Beaver Dam was probably more impressive, but like Division One, I was just so impressed with just what good basketball it was.
Yes.
Just watching Alton North and DePeer play, they had such, I don't know, like, I don't know about individual talent because I don't have the scouting reports on those girls. But it was such just good basketball. It was really fun to watch. And then, for Alton North to cap off their undefeated season, as the number one ranked team, was a fun moment. It was good stuff.
I would extend that back to the semifinal where Appleton North played Milwaukee King. What an excellent basketball game. And Milwaukee King was undefeated coming into state. Sydney Roby, the sophomore, is so good. She's 6'3", 6'4", excellent post player. I got to think she'll be a very top end recruit when she's a senior. But I mean, I thought Milwaukee King was going to win that game, and every time they got a foothold, Appleton North found a way to get, you know, to replenish its lead. I thought Appleton North was superb in that game and really looked like a team that should win the state title. And then, of course, the next night they came back and did so. And the Middleton DePeer semifinal was also very spirited and competitive. So very good Division I field this year. Just four teams that really deserve to be there and some high quality basketball, like you said. And a lot of teams that are going to be back next year. I mean, Beaver Dam's going to be right back in this spot next year. Monroe, the team they beat in the semifinals, is going to be back next year in D2. wouldn't surprise me at all to see King back in this position in some of the D1 teams. So really just a really nice tournament. Good turnout in terms of attendance, it sounds like. So a promising step forward for the girls' basketball tournament.
Yep, it was a good day. Like you said, attendance is great. I mean, being at the Rush Center is just, it's such a good thing for the girls' tournament. It's a smaller venue. It's kind of like their own venue now. Like, they kind of own it. It's their thing. And then having two area schools in the Division I final helped immensely, and it was a great crowd. So
yeah, definitely. And also, Cudahy, big showing by Bob Morande and the Cudahy Packers going to state for the first time, went on a crazy late-season run. So they will come home with a silver ball.
Yep.
Jumping over to the NCAA tournament, some Wisconsin fans were up in arms a little bit when they saw their Badgers given the eighth seed mere hours after taking second in the Big Ten tournament, losing to Michigan in the championship game. A lot of people saw Minnesota as a five seed. There was a question mark there since the Badgers beat Minnesota, finished higher than them in both the regular season and the tournament. I think people were pretty upset by that comparison to have the three-spot difference there. A lot of Big Ten teams seeded ahead of the Badgers. Marquette gets in as a 10 seed, facing a wildly overseeded number 7 seed, South Carolina, in South Carolina, so that's interesting. I don't know if how strongly you felt one way or the other. I saw some stuff you posted about the comparison between Minnesota and Wisconsin. I thought it was actually pretty good. I don't know if those were the biggest things that that you saw from the seeding show on Sunday, or if you had other takeaways.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw a lot of whining from people, and whining usually bothers me. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack with the Badgers. First of all, like, you can't blame, well, no, we can't start there. The committee doesn't look at, like, head-to-head. They just can't. They look at a resume. And I don't know if that's the way that it should be done or the way that I want it to be done, but that's the way that they do it. They look at RPI and they look at strength of schedule, right?
Yes.
And when they did that, when you look at the resume side by side, CBS.com has a easy-as-can-be comparison tool where you can pull up both resumes, and it's simple. Minnesota has a higher RPI. Their RPI is in line with right what their bracket says they are. You know, their RPI is 20. Wisconsin is 32. Simple. That's exactly where they're seated. That's not saying I agree with it. I'm saying that's what the committee looked at. All right? Their RPI is higher. They have more wins in the top 50. I think they have even more wins in the top 100. Like, they just have a better strength of schedule than the Badgers do. Now, it's not the Badgers' fault here, because they thought they scheduled extremely tough.
Right.
They scheduled Oklahoma, Syracuse, Georgetown. Don't blame the committee for this. Don't blame the Badgers for that. Blame Oklahoma, Syracuse, and Georgetown for being terrible teams this year. Like, that's the reality of what held the Badgers back, is because they don't have good wins. The Badgers just don't. Their best win is at Minnesota this year. That's their best win. So, it's really cut and dry when you look at how the NCAA selects it. If you don't like the way the NCAA selects it, then totally fine saying that they're using the wrong criteria. But based on the criteria that they used, it makes perfect sense.
One of the biggest ironies, I think, is that more people are going to pick Middle Tennessee to beat Minnesota in their brackets than people who pick Virginia Tech to beat Wisconsin in an 8-9 game. It's going to be kind of funny the way that shakes out. But I agree with you 100%. And if we learned one thing from that mid-year, that January bracket reveal when the Big Ten was not among the top 16 seeds, it's that the committee really values quality victories. You have to pile up really good victories to be highly regarded. It's why Butler, with a ton of losses, was in the top 16, and why a couple of those decisions were made the way that they were. And it's obviously not cut and dry. You can never narrow it down to one thing. And I think Wichita State is the most egregious situation, being seeded 10th with what Ken Pom and a few other metrics count as maybe a 3 or 4 seed, and I don't think anybody thought Wichita State would be that high. But, you know, Wisconsin can't really sing their song when you look at what Wichita State is facing. And it's just, it's the same thing, though. It's not maybe Wichita State's fault, but they don't have quality wins on the docket. I mean, who has Wisconsin beaten, as you look back at this season, that you could truly say that was an excellent win? I mean, I think is Maryland at the Kohl Center the biggest win they've had? They haven't beaten anybody. And that's, like you said, not necessarily their fault. That's some way the schedule fell.
Yeah, right. It happens a lot with football, because in football you have to schedule so far out. And I was trying to think of a Badgers example, and I just couldn't. So unfortunately, what comes to mind is Iowa. Like, I know that They scheduled Wyoming as like a guarantee game for this upcoming season. Wyoming might be in like the top 25 next year.
Right. Yes.
You know, so when you schedule so far in advance, especially for football, that's just the way it happens. And with basketball to a lesser degree, because you don't need to schedule that far out and you go in tournaments, so it's not really under your control. But yeah, it's not the Badgers' fault. Like they tried to schedule hard, but it is the Badgers' fault in that they didn't have any big statement wins. And I think that's also reflective of the Big Ten, because they beat a lot of teams. Just so happens, you know, they don't have those statement wins. And then the other thing, like, you know, I had said 2 minutes ago that I'm their best win was at Minnesota. So then people were screaming through their phones or whatever. Well, if you beat Minnesota, why aren't you seated ahead of them? And that's totally fine. We can go to head-to-head being a key factor, and in that case, Wisconsin gets the 5 seed, Minnesota the 6, and Iowa is your 4 seed. I love it. Let's go that way.
Yeah, of course. The
most, all of a sudden, now there's a little hole in your head-to-head argument, isn't there?
All roads lead back to...
Yeah, Marquette would be seated ahead of Villanova. It's just head-to-head is not the determining factor. They're looking at overall resumes.
All roads lead back to what suits J.P. Cadoran once again. But,
I'm saying.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And furthermore, let's even forget about the specific guidelines. If you try to find the hypocrisy in what the committee puts together, well, they did this but not this, you're just going to make yourself crazy. I mean, you just, at some point you have to surrender to this. This is an impossible job. And even though I think the Wichita State thing is ridiculous, there's still – By and large, there's still mostly defensible decisions. I mean, you could say, well, they care about overall body of work. Well, if that's the case, then why isn't Duke ahead of North Carolina when Duke not only had better overall body of work, but actually beat them 2-1 head to head and everything? And it's just like, don't try to make yourself crazy figuring out every in and out. And the bottom line is, if you're a top 3 seed or a 4 seed, which I think we can all agree the Badgers were not, those are the teams that really should feel strongly. Those teams legitimately have a chance to go to the Final Four. And other seeds do, other seeds have a chance, but I feel like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, they're all the same. I mean, they're all lumped together as similar, similar schools, and their odds of getting through are about the same. They all have to beat at least one elite program to get into the Final Four. Well, they have to be more than one to get into the Final Four, but to advance to the Sweet 16, they're going to have to beat somebody that's better than them. In this case, it's unfortunate for Wisconsin. That's Villanova, which is very likely the best team in the tournament. I don't think Wisconsin can beat that team, but then again, we've seen Marquette beat that team, so who knows? Maybe Marquette gets really hot in the tournament and they shoot their way into the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight as well. I mean, I don't think anybody would be stunned to see that happen at this point.
Yep. So, you know, in reality, the Badgers might have gotten, you know, they definitely have a harder path. They might have gotten cheated out of a Sweet 16 berth that maybe if they were a 6 or a 7, they could have beaten that 3 seed or that 2 seed and gotten a Sweet 16 berth. But in reality, I don't think anybody thinks this is a Final Four team or an Elite Eight team. I mean, they're just, it's not. So instead of a Sweet 16 season, maybe this is just a round of 32 season. And even then, you know, there's no guarantee they're winning this first game either. If they play like they did in the second half against Michigan, they're not advancing past the first round. So it's everybody loves to complain. I can only point out so many facts before I just have to log off Twitter and just
Spectrum Sports posted a clip of the interview that your buddy Dennis Krause did with Dwayne Wilson of Marquette and how emotional he got sort of in the aftermath of learning that he was in fact going to the NCAA tournament. I mean, none of those guys have been to the tournament with Marquette before, so this
but
is
Kate
a really
Reinhardt has gone now
with USC. Yeah, and UNLV. Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy.
So,
but yes, that Marquette show is tonight at 5 o'clock, Monday night at 5 o'clock, and I'm sure we'll play it, you know, another 15 times throughout the week. So
yeah,
that's always one of our favorite things. We used to make it 6 straight years. You know, we made that show, and then we haven't made it in a while. So it's fun to be able to do that again.
Yep, I don't think it was a surprise to see them in the field, but still a cool relief, I'm sure, for people around that program. That'll be a neat thing to see them play. They play Friday night on St. Patrick's Day. Wisconsin plays Thursday night against Buzz Williams, Marquette's favorite former coach. They'll be playing on Thursday night. So jumping to the boys' basketball state tournament, the field is set for tournament going on at the same time as those games in the Kohl Center in Madison, the boys' Division 1 through 5 state tournament. Oshkosh North going down is by far the biggest storyline. Stevens Point is not to be denied. Two-time defending state champ looking for a third title behind Joey Hauser, whose brother Sam had a lot to do with the last couple titles. So that's the big story, I would say, from the sectionals. I don't know if anything else jumped out at you. Arrowhead, kind of a surprise. guys that they snuck through to get to state, although they've just been playing really well over the course of the season and especially late. Anything else jump out to you?
Not really. It was pretty impossible for me to follow with trying to trying to do girls state on Saturday and try and follow what was going on, especially because they were all at different times. You know, like it wasn't like everything happens at 7 o'clock and then I can just track who won and who lost. It was like, wait, that game's going on right now. But no, to me, I would say Arrowhead was surprising just because I remember seeing something like they were down by, you know, I talked to you about it. They were down by 8 at something in the second half and then they came back. I think Brookfield Central is really impressive. That's no surprise. Everybody has been talking about them all year long. But just to see them do it and the way that they do it is really impressive. And then also for me, seeing Cedarburg upset Kakana, was really big. John Diener is their star player, but to be able to stop Jordan McCabe and the defending champs says a lot. So I'm very interested to see Cedarburg against Washington in Division II. Also on the other side of Division II is Kobe King and Lacrosse Central, which is awesome. To see just a star player and future Badger getting back to state. I would love to see him in the state finals once again. And there you go. So those are my headlines. And then something that you don't care about, but Appleton Xavier is in Division III and undefeated going up against Ripon. And those are my teams too. So I have to care about them.
Easily the highlight game of Thursday is to see Xavier against Ripon, two undefeated teams. I mean, Ripon has been the number one team in the state for a while in D3. They beat Martin Luther in the sectional final, and Xavier, also one of the best teams in the state. That's going to be dynamite on Thursday. So something to watch for right out of the gate. I wouldn't call Cedarburg's win over Kakana an upset. Kakana had a very rocky year in the aftermath of winning the state title. Jordan McCabe's been doing great things, but they lost Adam Smith, one of their top returning players, to injury. That really hurt them. But they got it together at the end of the year, and that was a very competitive sectional final. Cedarburg won 3 straight tight games to get to state. Tom Diener, everyone knows him with the Milwaukee Vincent teams. He's back with his son, John, the junior, who's leading the way. The DePaul commit. So that'll be interesting, like you said, to see them. They play Milwaukee Washington Friday afternoon, and then Brookfield Central Arrowhead. Central's been number one at the round ball rankings most of the year. They look really, really good. They're undersized, but play so well together. Gage Malinsick, their sophomore point guard, very exciting up and coming player. So we'll have to take a look at that matchup. I think is going to be really, really good. It's going to be the last battle on Friday night at the Kohl Center in Madison.
And obviously, anything can happen. I have no problem with any of these teams winning. You have to think Brookfield Central wins both of those games, right? I mean, you have to think that they'd be favored over Arrowhead. And then I don't know anything about Madison Memorial, but I know that Stevens Point is nowhere near as good as they were 2 years ago and last year. So I have to think that Brooks Central would be favored to win, right?
Yeah, I would say that, but I wouldn't make it a lopsided. Just because Stevens Point, Madison Memorial have that pedigree of being there all the time, and or at least recently in Stevens Point's case, and they just, those coaches just know how to win there, and they've clearly put it together at the end of the season. Madison Memorial's got a pretty high level player, and Stevens Point has possibly the best player in the state. So I would not rule either one of those guys out in the other semifinal. And I still think Arrowhead has a legit shot to beat Brookfield Central too. So it's going to be a really competitive D1 tournament. I would certainly pick Kobe King's bunch in the Division II tournament, and would lean toward Ripon in D3. But certainly the winner of that semifinal is going to be favored in the final.
Gotcha. Very nice. Should be fun. I don't know if I'm going to be there or if I'm going to be in Buffalo or in Greenville, South Carolina, but I'll be somewhere.
Sounds like fun. Well, this dovetails perfectly into my conversation with Steve Teets. We talked about some of the best programs. Tom Diener's name was mentioned. The Stevens Point name was mentioned. Madison Memorial was mentioned as some of the best programs in state history. So give a listen here. We did talk about this a couple weeks ago. I say it's in advance of the sectional games. We actually even did that before the regional games. We were kind of preparing that for last week, and then the UW-Milwaukee thing happened, so we didn't end up using it last week. So the convo is going to be a little dated. We talk about like Dominican and Germantown. They've been eliminated since, but give a listen. We talk about some pretty cool stuff, I think. Joining me is Stephen L. Teets, the resident history aficionado at Now Newspapers. He's the if you know anything about Now Newspaper sports coverage, you've heard this name, you've heard this voice, you've seen him out at events. He knows a lot about a lot of history for a lot of sports, but we're talking boys basketball because it is a good time of year to be a boys basketball fan. Now we're now at the sectional level of the boys playoffs. I know this is something you really look forward to.
Yes, we're going to be at the sectional level, but what we're going to be talking about today, JR and I, we're going to go a little bit back and forth on what possibly were the best high school boys teams of all time in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and there's a couple of good reasons to talk about this now. First of all, I have my story out. I'm kind of treading on your territory talking about Germantown High School, the recent history there. I put a story out earlier last week. An oral history of the 2011 Super Tuesday game, a very controversial finish with Appleton East that was the starting point for a run that included three straight state championships, a 69-game winning streak, and a fourth appearance in a state title game. Could have been five, maybe, if they had won that game, but some controversial calls there. So check that out at mynorthwestnow.com. It's called On Second Thought. And Germantown is not in the equation this year, and neither is Dominican, or at least as much as they have been. And Stevens Point, some real recent dynasties that might be coming to an end here as we get into the late stages of the postseason. So that's a reason to talk about it now. And plus, it's just fun to go back and talk a little history, don't you think?
It is always a good deal of fun to go talk about a little history here. A few years ago, I had the great opportunity to do this great story for the Wisconsin State Journal on the great Milwaukee Lincoln teams of the late 50s and through the mid 60s. And that might be just a good starting point for where we're going with this today. Any conversation with great teams forever have to include those teams, first coached by the great Dick Wadowitz, and then later by Jim Smolin, still a fixture in area Milwaukee basketball circles by working with at Whitefish Bay. I would argue his mid-60s group, the one that had the backcourt with Clarence Sherrod, Downtown Freddie Brown, and Ellis Tarantine, might be the apex. That team scored over 100 points at will, was rarely challenged, and just had such overwhelming talent. They would travel everywhere to see anybody at any time, and they just were so dominant. I would argue that that backcourt may be the best in state history.
Yeah, you're talking about Clarence Sherrod, Downtown Freddie Brown, and now, correct me if I'm wrong, one of them hit a buzzer beater in the state tournament, right?
There was not a buzzer, but there was a 4-point game in there. There was a 4-point game in that tournament. I believe that was against Monroe. But other than that, you know, there's a little website, just somebody with a love of Lincoln basketball put this up and put up all their stats for those 2 years.
Oh,
and
wow,
they were
cool.
Just absurd. And cool. They were just absurd.
Yeah, I think when we talk about best teams, you can't really talk about best single-year teams. I think there's just too much data. It'd be really hard to parse through that. So you got to look at programs that sort of had a sustained run of success and some of these names that are part of it. And Lincoln definitely had that for a long time. And it's easy to, I think, romanticize them even a little bit more. Not that they need it, but because that school is no longer around.
Exactly.
You know, I think it's sort of this historical. It even adds to the historical sort of
their mythos. So it adds to their mythos.
Yeah,
yes.
for sure. So that's your choice for the number one team of all time. My choice is going to be, now I'm playing in the deep end of the pool here. This is not something I have, obviously, you'll find out, any firsthand experience of, but I asked Mark Miller this question at wisports.net, and he threw a couple possibilities at me. A few podcasts ago, we talked to him about the greats of WISA athletics. They merged with WIAA in 2000, and there's kind of been a lot of history that's sort of lost, that hasn't been documented online, about the great WISA teams, the great players, and the tournaments and everything. So I talked to him a little about that. He proposed a couple teams, the St. Catharines team in 1960 that had all five starters go on to play big-time basketball, and the 1972 Marquette High School team that had all five starters go on to play NCAA basketball. We'll talk about that Marquette team, but this St. Catharines team from 1960 is crazy. They did go 28-2, but they lost to in a National Catholic Basketball Tournament to John Thompson's team. So John Thompson, who went on to be the Georgetown head coach.
John Thompson. Right.
So when he was a player, they lost to them in the national championship of that. Their starters were a guy named Rocky Calvelli, who played at Marquette, Thomas Schilke, who played at Montana, Charles Wood, who played at Loyola and was a member of the 1963 Loyola team that won the national championship.
Oh, wow.
James Poulsen played at Marquette, and then Bob Letch, who he played at the lowest level. He played NAIA basketball in San Antonio, Texas. But
he's merely a legend.
Yeah, he's only a legend in Wisconsin hoops as right. The coach at Racine St. Catharines, the guy who went back to his alma mater and built up a powerhouse basketball program there. So that's five some pretty impressive names. Now, I won't pretend like I know a lot about those names, even though they played high-level basketball, but that's pretty impressive. The head coach of that team was John McGuire. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue with a team that had five Division I, or, I mean, in this case, pretty close to Division I, 4D1 and 1 NAIA starters. That's incredible. That just does not come along every day, and you'd be hard-pressed. I'm sure you could find a couple more throughout the history of high school basketball in the state, but you're not going to find many.
No, you're not. But we should bring up that Marquette team because you brought that to my attention, because that team, that 72 Marquette team, was absolutely ridiculous. It featured Gary Rosenberger, key player on Marquette, two players who played key roles on that Marquette title team, Gary Rosenberger and Bill Neary, and it just had Jeff Jonas who had a spectacular college career of his own too,
and his daughter is now playing at Northwestern,
who is our player of the year, Maya Jonas, who was our player of the year a few years ago. That team was spectacular. I believe that was Paul Nowak, the great Paul Nowak, was the coach of that team. That was very, very good. Let's see. And then, well, should we just roll right into my wheelhouse?
Sure, but first I want to make sure there's no confusion. So they were Marquette High. That's the Marquette High team we're talking about. Two of them were Marquette University players on that 1977 title team. That's what you're talking about.
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear.
Rosenberger and Neary. So, I mean, I think that adds to the mystique, too, when you've got two guys that go on, stay in state, and win a national title. I mean, there obviously are not many of those lying around in the state of Wisconsin.
Not
but
at all.
That certainly adds to the mystique of that.
And the fact is that the WIAA and WISA teams rarely crossed over and played each other. The schedules were smaller that year, only 18 games a year, so there was less wiggle room for non-conference games, so these teams really didn't see each other. So that just sort of adds to the, I don't know, you could argumentative phase of all this, that you did the big what if they had played each other, et cetera,
right.
et cetera.
Right. Yeah, so as we're looking at the historical standpoint, there's going to be a lot of teams that people throw out that are before my time, before your time even, which is significantly further back in time than my time.
But I think we're trying to address that.
Yeah. But if we're looking at more recent teams, there's definitely one that's going to jump to mind for people, and that's the German Tomboys basketball player.
And again, I will go to my grave saying this. If you told me 20 years ago somebody would come into Germantown, Germantown, which was a basketball backwater, and turned them into a near legendary program, I would have bet every dollar in my IRA, given you 10-1 odds, and looked forward to collecting, because this is such an improbable story that Steve Showalter created, the 69 game winning streak, the three state titles in a row. The best coaching job he did was in 15, when that team had no business going 27-0 and only losing 2 points in the final. The best team out of that was the 12-13 team led by state player of the year Luke Fisher, who is now finishing off a fine career at Marquette University, 1,000-point scorer at Marquette University. That team was sort of likened a little bit to those great Lincoln teams. They would run up and down the court. They would press the living daylights out of you. Nobody could get close to them, and they did take on almost everybody in the state that they could. I even talked to Jim Smallins about this for an article, and he was impressed with that team. He said he would have really liked to have seen a game between his top team and that group, because they had such depth at guard, and they had two strong forwards who took a lot of the pressure off of Fisher defensively. I just remember the Ryan Waltz, the coach over at Wisco, after about a 30-plus point loss to them, this Wisco team went on to finish second in state D2. If you turn the ball over, they will shred you. If you turn the ball over 22 times like we did, you will not be within 30. That is just what it was like to face that team.
Right, and the Germantown dynasty, so to speak, again, they've got the state record for 69 consecutive wins. Although it's a little bit of an asterisk, because that Dominican team that got credited for 61 wins, there's a loss that they took that was later turned into a forfeit victory against, I think it's Thomas Moore.
Thomas Moore in a
Right. So by practical standards, it's 61. But if you count that, that's actually a 71 game winning streak for Dominican. And I'm going to jump back to that team in a minute and talk about Dominican in general, which
we need to do. We'd be remiss.
That's a candidate for maybe the best program in state history overall.
The great late great Greg Dandridge and the Gaz legend.
Right. So before we go back in time, though, we'll go forward from Germantown because they sort of passed the torch to another kind of mini powerhouse here in Stevens Point. Back-to-back state titles. They are among the candidates to do so again this year, although I think that would surprise some people. Joey Hauser, the junior, is one of the best players in the state, one of the top recruits in the state, and his older brother Sam, now at Marquette University, was a big piece of what they had the last 2 years.
Trev Anderson.
Who's at UWGB, right, and had a great freshman season. So, yeah, I don't know if we've got the context yet before we could say where Stevens Point ranks in the all-time great programs, but certainly this two-year run they've had is as good as anything we've seen.
Yes, they were truly dominant last year. No one got even close.
Not even
close to them last year. Yeah, and I loved watching that team. I mean, they had all the pieces together. Anderson and Hauser, Sam, were just unstoppable. They could create, they could shoot, they had size and they had speed and they could. Yeah. I would actually love to see a game between 2013 Germantown and last year's Point team. I think that would be a fantastic.
We've had
game.
This conversation because you would take Germantown in that game. I know you would, and I would
like
not.
By about a smidgen. I would take them by a smidgen.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, you can. I would take Stevens Point last year in that game. I saw them both play, and I just, wow, last year's Stevens Point team was so special. I mean, I'll never forget Sam Hauser's scoring the first 16 points in the state championship game. That was a special accomplishment as well. So that was the end of Germans. I mean, they went to four straight state finals, which is pretty impressive in its own right, especially in Division I. And that was sort of a nice passing of the torch where Stevens Point beat Germantown.
But, yeah, like I said, we need to go back to that great Gaz Dandridge team that by Dominican. And, I mean, they really captured the imagination of a lot of people. They got all kinds of headlines all over the place. And they dominated teams too. They weren't a great physical team, but they were just a great team. And it was all led by Don Gaz. And it was something because everybody was watching, you know, and when that Thomas More game came around, when they beat them, only to be taken away because the best player was ineligible.
Yes.
Unfortunately. It made headline news. It was huge business when they lost. You got to throw them into that mix.
Right, yeah. You had that Dominican boys team that was so good. The Milwaukee Pius girls team that I think won 92 consecutive games with Heidi Bunick as part of that as well. So the private schools did have some truly elite talent. And the funny thing about Dominican is that if you're talking about the best program of all time overall, you got to mention them. But then, like, if you're saying the best run, there's several phases to the Dominican experience.
Right.
You've got the Don Gaz years, and that's, of course, a very well-known name in Milwaukee prep basketball. We're going to talk about his son in a minute, but
right.
You've got sort of there's a two-year run. 2004-2005, Dominican wins back-to-back state titles in the WIAA, their first WIAA state titles under Paul Wallersheim. And that 2005 team, if we're talking about 1 year, now I don't know in terms of overall, like, all five players going D1 or anything, if they had that, but they had Brandon Brown and Ben Haley, who were two very, very good high school players. Then they had Quamine Mitchell as a freshman who went on to play D1 ball at St. Louis, and J.R. Blount. I do like people named J.R., but Walter J.R. Blount, who went on and had a very nice career D1 at Loyola and has been a coach since then as well. That's a team that went undefeated, 27-0. Along the way, they beat Madison Memorial, led by Wesley Matthews. They won the Division I state title that year. They gave Racine St. Catharines their only loss. That's a St. Cats team that I really like, with Cordero Barkley, Reggie Bunch, Devron Bostic, who played at Minnesota, James Harzma, who played D1 ball at UW-Milwaukee, right? So, and Jamie DeMatthew, a very good point guard. They beat that team. That team won the Division II state title. So Dominican wins the D3 state title, having beaten the other two champs and beaten everybody else along the way as well.
Right.
So that was an extremely impressive team.
And then of course, you have the five straight state championships, unprecedented run that just ended, or actually, I shouldn't even say that. It could continue this year for all we know, but definitely it doesn't seem like it's going to continue for a sixth year, but five straight years. Diamond Stone is part of four of those teams. There's a 2012 team with Jamal Taylor, Dwayne Wilson, Diamond Stone, all exceptional basketball players. Again, maybe not across the board. And I know that they get downgraded a little bit because of how the five divisions spread the talent a little thin. And as a D4 or D3 school, they didn't have the same level of competition.
And to their credit, they did take on big teams. They did take on Germantown in several of those years. And unfortunately, those games were
blowouts. Well, in the latter part. Yeah, I mean, Dominican.
The last two years were blowouts.
Right. Dominican, yeah. I know, in 2010 beat that Catholic Memorial team with TJ Bray and a very good team with Derek Schell, Austin Puchulowski, Tom Neary, younger Neary. But yeah, like, they did have to face lesser competition. I don't think anybody disputes that.
But that 2005 team, you can definitely make a point about that.
Yeah, for sure.
A huge point about that.
So right. but then where do you think the Diamond Stone teams fall in the lexicon? I mean, are they way down the list? Because five state championships was never been done before. The four had just been done once before.
And it's like you said, we're in five divisions now, and it is a little diluted. And they are... Let's face it, Dominican has been able to recruit D1 level players, and they're playing on D4, D5 level competition, and that sort of does dilute it. I give them a lot of credit for the accomplishment, for having the discipline and the cohesiveness to do that. It takes a lot to sustain that level of excellence for so many years in a row. Is it a great thing for them? Yes, but In this ranking of all time, maybe not so much because I give them credit. They took on Germantown, they took on teams like Germantown and others, and those games, like we talked, were blowouts. But those teams were primarily built around one or two elite players, and they had several good role players. But you would go to the state level and you would watch this elite player essentially take over the entire freaking state tournament because he was so far above all the others.
Yeah, so two points before we move on from them. I think the fact that they did dominate is a notch in their favor. They were not tested through this four-year run, particularly
on their
Diamond
level.
Stone. They weren't tested on their level. They crushed people. So, I mean, at some point you kind of have to say they beat the schedule that was in front of them, and they did it in a way that made it seem like they are clearly one of the best of all time. So I do think that does speak to their ability. And then I still think, and Derek Berger, who stepped down after they won their fifth title in 2016, that last championship was a crazy good coaching job, because even though Kostas Antetokounmpo is a highly regarded physical talent, he still hadn't played much the year before. He wasn't a key part of their rotation, and he was still developing as a basketball player. He became a great defensive weapon, and they didn't have Diamond Stone anymore, and he took a team with a lot of new faces, and they won another state title. I thought that was so impressive.
It was, and I did see that team last year. Yes, and I would agree with that. That was a great coaching job. I would rank that coaching job with Showalter's in 2015 because, yes, you had the 6'9 elite defensive player, and then you had a lot of guys who probably played over their heads for almost the entire season, and it resulted in a glorious thing at the end.
And that fifth state title eclipsed the mark set by Randolph with Ryan Tillema. There's another a run of teams that we could spend a lot of time talking about. They won four state titles. They granted at the smallest division level, again, against not the same level of competition that some D1 and D2 schools face, but still a pretty good accomplishment
but
for
again,
a public school, too.
But again, and the discipline. Again, the discipline that's needed, the cohesions that needed, the leadership that is needed on that. And we haven't really talked about the coaches. I mean, we talk about Nowak, who was there forever at Marquette. Don Gaz, who was over there forever at the Dominican.
Right.
And Showalter, who in 18 years established a marvelous record at Germantown.
Bob Legit, St. Catharines, Jerry Pettigrew, Cuba City. I mean,
and look at the two people who led those Lincoln teams, Wadowitz, Smallins. Those guys are on
the high tier.
On the high tier. I mean, and, you know, And depending upon what Stevens Point does this year, you can mention Mr. Anderson in that, in that same regard.
Don Goss's son, Jim Goss, many people know him as the architect of the Milwaukee King Empire. I feel like we're 20 minutes into this conversation and we probably haven't addressed enough of the sort of generations of city conference teams. But I think it'd be fun to just talk about, and we won't do it here necessarily, but like how great of a documentary would it be to have Tom Diener and Jim Goss just have like a documentary about them and their rivalries and how they built city conference powers, Diener over at Milwaukee Vincent and Goss at Milwaukee King.
And that would be a marvelous thing. That would be a marvelous to have that conversation because Goss was such a fierce advocate for city basketball that he never felt it got enough respect from the WIA or much of anybody else. And now I think he's just recognized that, you know, it's easier to fight with a little more resources at his disposal by going over to Dominican. But along those lines, we have neglected Vincent, unfortunately, what Diener did in the 90s. He did it with a defensive-minded squad. He did a defensive-minded ethos. But he had players. He was able to bring players into Vincent, and he got them to buy into a system. And they dominated for years. So much so that other people emulated his style, much to our chagrin, because it created many, many not so pleasant state tournament games of like 40-35 and things like that. But give credit where, I mean, he got players, James Wright and all those others, and they played like men. They would just dictate the tempo and they would suffocate you with the defense and they would just win games over and over and over again. And that was truly a great job by him. He's not the most popular of coaches, but
they're both polarizing figures, both Diener and Goss.
Right. But what they did cannot be, argued. It is.
I think when you think of city conference basketball, stereotypically you think of offensive minded basketball, but that's kind of the genius of what these guys were able to do is you're talking about the system. Like, defense was everything for them. I mean, there's infamous situations where Vincent would hold the ball and, you know, really, really make it a minimum possession game, and they were able to win that way. And that's sort of, I mean, they were playing chess while other coaches are playing checkers, and that's how they wound up having such powerful programs year in and year out. I mean, even when King wasn't in its heyday, I think a lot of people forget how close that first Germantown state championship was in 2012. That's a 3-point game, the game where the state tournament where Zach Showalter in the semifinal infamously takes the opening tip for a dunk. But
that was the semifinal.
Yeah, I know. That was the semi, I think, against Madison Memorial. But you know, that last game, I think Austin Malone Mitchell's on that team for King. I mean, that was a really tense state championship
game. And to be perfectly honest, I still remember Jim Goss coming into the Kohl Center media room. He was not happy with the officiating. That Germantown got to the line a lot. That dork, Germantown guys were in the middle of celebrating, and he came in, and that door slammed, and he just sat there fuming. That just showed how much he cared.
Yeah,
that just
I love that man.
And I know how much he cared. Yes, I've come to respect him tremendously.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I'm happy that he's over at Dominican. It's too bad for City Conference basketball because King is way, way down this year.
And that is a pity. That is a horrible pity. That should not happen. Hopefully they can get it resurrected fairly quickly. So
yeah, Vincent's got a good thing going again. It'd be interesting to see if they could get back to that level. One of my favorite state championship games, and I think this has, because it was so early in my career, so it sticks out a little bit more, was watching Milwaukee Vincent and Marcus Landry take on Madison Memorial, that team with Wesley Matthews and Corey Vernon was on that team. I want to say that's the 2005 state championship game. They ended up crossing paths. Matthews went from Madison area to play at Marquette in college, and Marcus Landry went from Milwaukee Vincent to play at Madison.
Right.
And had a career there, a successful career there. So I definitely enjoyed seeing those two square off. Madison Memorial won that title in 2005. So those are obviously the better players that we've had in high school hoops.
And
in
we
the
almost
last
forget
15
we almost,
years.
And we almost forgot about that Memorial. What Steve Collins did at Memorial.
We haven't said anything about Madison Memorial. What's wrong with us?
And then because you talked about the Wesley Matthews team, but then a few years later, when Germantown was just getting started, they had the misfortune of facing Jerome Maimon and
Vander Blue
in the quarterfinal at state. And quarterfinal state, and Vander Blue goes off for like 35 points, hits every three-pointer he hit him from Lake Mendota, and they go on to crush the state that year. Germantown tried to stay with him behind freshman Zach Showalter, who had 13 points that year.
Yes.
But they just could not keep up with that Maimon and Blue juggernaut. And yeah. I mean, it was what Collins did. And Collins is a bit of a controversial figure too, but he did good work there, and they won state titles, and they were always a fixture for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the number of times they made it to state in a row, but it was ridiculous. It was mm-hmm. definitely in the double digits. I believe Maguanago, mm-hmm. I want to say that second Germantown title in 2013, Maguanago beats them in the sectional final. I was at that game. That's the end of a pretty long run, but you're talking about Jerron Maimon, who went to Tennessee, didn't have a powerhouse college career, but was awesome in high school, definitely one of the top recruits in the state. Vander Blue, whom I recall initially was not, he was playing on the same team with some older kids that had really high level college aspirations. So he wasn't on my radar initially. And then all of a sudden, I think the game you're talking about is where it really was like, holy smokes, Vander Blue might be the best one of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to Madison, commits to Madison, ends up decommitting and coming to Marquette. Much ado about that situation. He was upset with how he'd been, I think, portrayed in social media or discussed in social media and elsewhere, and really didn't feel like they had the support at Madison. That was a big situation. Left Marquette a year earlier than people wanted. So I know he's a controversial figure to some people who are fans of college basketball in the state, but man, as a high school player, that guy was great. And did not win Mr. Basketball in 2010 when TJ Bray did. And I think TJ Bray, he's clearly the best player the Classic 8 has ever seen. Awesome, awesome player. It might have been a case where we could have seen a shared title, because Vander Blue was at that level.
Right.
He really should have gotten acknowledged for that. So nothing against TJ Bray. Phenomenal. Like,
right,
love
right.
that guy. Totally deserving of Mr. Basketball. I think that might have been a situation where we could have seen a shared trophy. Not sure if that was considered or not. But so yeah, those are some of the best programs. Here's a fun note. I still am it boggles my mind what Seymour did at the early part of the century here. They made the state final 7 years in a row. 7 years in a row you make the state final. 2000,
I forgot that.
01, 02, 03, 05, 04, 05, 06, and then they make the tournament again in 07 and lose in the semifinal. But now,
how many titles?
Well, that's the thing, Steve. Like, not only, how do you make it 7 years in a row and only win twice? Like, and they needed that one in 06 to, because at the time when they won it in 06, they had been there 6 years in a row with one title. Like, if you're good enough at that level where you're going to go to the state championship every year, you'd think that you're on such a high level that you're going to win the vast majority of the time. But there was a stretch of six straight years. They went to the title game 6 straight years and only won one title. How frustrating. And that's going to prevent people from thinking of the Seymour Thunder as one of the best programs in state history. But you got to consider. I mean, that run is off the wall, right?
Right, right. You know, reminds me of another sport. It reminds me of another sport when my old alma mater, Menominee Falls North, for there was a 10-year stretch in cross country. They were considered the elite for like 10 years running. They won three titles, had six runner-up finishes. And I look at all those runner-up finishes, only one or two could I say they actually blew it or fell short of it. They were just beaten by superior teams.
One team better every year.
Right, and that may have been the problem for Seymour in this situation. That may have been the problem. I know there were several close games. Wasn't that Whitefish Bay they beat in 2011.
They beat Merrill, I want to say, in the championship
game. In the final, but I'm talking about the semifinal when they got the tip in at the buzzer.
Yeah, was that against Wanakee or was that against Seymour? Because those are your four teams that year.
That was Wanakee. I think you were right. I think that was Wanakee. I thought that was Seymour that they thwarted by.
It's Merrill with David Jesperson, who is hit. In my opinion, one of the most underrated shots in NCAA tournament history when they had a half-court buzzer beater last year for Northern Iowa that I don't understand why we don't know that play like the back of our hands. You tell people that, right. And it's like, wait, that actually happened? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Which comes back to my theory, my alma mater's Valparaiso. Bryce Drew's shot isn't a big deal if they don't make the Sweet 16 and win that second game. No one remembers that they won the second game. My contention is if they don't, No one remembers that first game shot either. But anyway, that's...
And the Nicolay connection in that.
Yes, the Nicolay. Yeah, the Jenkins chickens. Twins who right. Were a part of that. Bill Jenkins threw the pass, of course, to Bryce Drew, who drains the triple. And as we're getting closer to the big games in March, I mean, that's a memory that comes up every single year.
Right.
I think Jesperson's shot should too, but no one... I don't think it's going to be remembered as fondly because they did not win that next game, even though they should have. Okay. That second game, by the way, the biggest meltdown in NCAA tournament history. That is a fact. Anybody else that runs across your mind as we talk about the greatest programs or greatest teams?
We have covered a lot of ground here.
Yep.
We could go on and on this, but this was a good overview. It just reminded me of the depth. Wisconsin high school basketball doesn't get a lot of credit for things. For its depth or for its power, like Illinois or California or Florida or places like that, but New York, man, we have had our moments. We have had our moments. We have had our programs, and the state's reputation is getting better. There are more guys playing better high school. I'm better playing college ball right now, and it is because of better high school coaching, better program development. And I think in this last 7 to 8 years, with, I'd even go back 10, 15, with the rise of the Dominican program, with the rise of Germantown, with the rise of Point, we are seeing something of a little bit of a golden age, I would dare say. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see who emerges out of D1 this year. Everybody says Oshkosh North is the clear favorite right now. And Steve Showalter respects the heck out of Frank Shady. Steve said in his prime, when he was in his playing prime, and everybody knows about his playing prime, he never wanted to play Shady because he knew Shady would kick his butt.
That's funny because he's about half the size of Steve Showalter.
But the thing is that team is considered, that team is considered the favorite this season. That will be interesting to see how it all breaks down.
Definitely check out my story on the Germantown that controversial 2011 Super Tuesday game over again at mynorthwestnow.com, and check out all of our coverage of state tournament basketball plus the other state tournaments in the winter sports season at My Community Now and LakeCountryNow.com. Thanks, Steve.
And thank you, JR. And trust me, JR's oral history of that game is absolutely fantastic. Please do check it out.
Yeah, listen to the man. Thanks, Steve. We'll talk to you again. Thanks to Steve Teets for sitting down with me and talking basketball. A couple things I want to call your attention to. I mentioned that oral history on Second Thought. You can still check that out at mynorthwestnow.com. Roundball Rankings has still got a lot of cool information on it. That's mycommunitynow.com/roundball. Got an updated list of career scoring leaders, among other things. Cedarburg's Jordan Johnson and John Diener. Those are the top two guys in our career scoring chart right now, and they'll continue to compile points at the state tournament. Also, 68 Degrees of Separation is live, my second annual stab at creating a Wisconsin connection for every team in the Big Dance. Some are obvious, some are ridiculous. There's a lot of fun there, so check that out at Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com.
What's the most ridiculous one that you found?
Well, man, I have to think now. It was a little bit more grounded than it was in previous years. Some of the player connections are a little weak, like certain coaches wound up, you know, coaching this guy. I did do 6 degrees of Dwayne Bacon, who's the best player on the Florida State team, and went ahead and just, in the spirit of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, connect him to former Marquette star Steve Novak through Villanova's Jay Wright and Penn State and all that. So that is the intentionally most ridiculous one on my list.
Fair enough. Well, again, Monday night we have our special on Marquette making the tournament with a bunch of interviews that are really good, I've been told. So that's Monday at 5 o'clock, and obviously replaying a bunch throughout the week. Also tomorrow, so Tuesday at 7:30 p.m., Wisconsin against Xavier from last year with Bronson Koenig's buzzer beater. We have our timeless series. So we have that one. We have Marquette against Syracuse, which got him, I think, into the Elite Eight, if I'm not mistaken. That one's Wednesday. On Thursday, it's Wisconsin against Oregon from 2 years ago. Marquette against North Carolina from 1977. I heard that was a pretty big game. And then Wisconsin against Arizona from 2015 on Sunday.
What? That Marquette-Syracuse game, is that not the Elite Eight game that Marquette lost? Or is this a different one?
That's what I'm thinking. I don't know. I think that has to be it, because I think they beat Miami and then faced Syracuse. Maybe that one's not as fun to watch as the other one.
Yeah, I don't want to watch a game where Marquette loses. I want to watch the game against, is it Butler in the Sweet 16 to get them there, where Vander Blue hits some big shots?
I thought that was Miami that they beat. I don't know.
Yeah, no, they beat Miami, but they also, I don't know. I don't know. It's all running together. All the great runs through the state tournament, or the NCAA tournament. March.
That happens. So instead, there's a lot of Wisconsin wins for you there, if that helps. So,
all right. Sounds good.
Good timeless stuff.
So we had a long podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. It is the season for basketball. We'll chat next week and talk about some NCAA, talk about the boys basketball state tournament, maybe look ahead to the spring a little bit, the Brewers. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff that we could still touch on. So thanks for joining me, JP. Hope you have a good week of travel or whatever it is you're going to be doing.
Oh, yeah. At least the weather will be nice to travel in. The best part is that the storm that's hitting us right now is going right to Buffalo. So I could be just stuck with snow all week. I did look at the forecast. It's supposed to snow like every day in Buffalo.
Buffalo, I picture like a house where you can't even open the door because there's so much snow. Like that seems like Buffalo, New York to me.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. Going to be interesting, the teams that are in Milwaukee. Iowa State's got a ton of Wisconsin presence on it, so that's a good spot for them.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know. You don't love your friends from Ames, but they do have a lot of Sconnies, so that's gonna be interesting. Good. I'm cheering for them.
Good. Well, I'll tell the Bradley Center Rims to protect themselves from Deontay Burton's thunderous dunks.
Oh, my goodness. So great. Check that out. You should find that viral clip if you haven't seen it already. Holy smokes. Sure.
All right, nice work, JR. Talk to you next time.
See you, JP.